Hi, guys, and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. This is Mike Harvath, CEO and founder of Revenue Rocket, the world's premier growth strategy and M&A consultancy for IT services companies. We are here with my esteemed partners, Ryan Barnett and Matt Lockhart, recording our 50th episode. We're very excited to be here for this third week of April in 2021. And today, we're going to have a little fun, share some of the bloopers, some of the things we've seen, mistakes that have occurred along the way in our business as it relates to M&A, and share that with you. So hopefully you guys can avoid some of those landmines.
Hey, Matt. Mike, you know, I'm curious. I'm the new guy here in the room, but which is more surprising to you? That you've been in business for 20 years or that you've done 50 podcasts?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Certainly, I'm shocked that we are doing our 50th episode. It seems like just yesterday we started this journey to record a almost weekly podcast. We haven't had every single week, but almost weekly. And it's been pretty cool. We love to share kind of some of our experiences with all you guys.
Yeah. So, you know, you say bloopers, and there's some things that I'm guessing some of our clients wish they may not have done. But there's probably learnings in all of these things as well.
Yeah, there is. And we're hoping to share some of that today. Some things we've seen along the way in transactions that hopefully you guys can avoid, as I said, stepping in the cow pie, so to speak. We can avoid that, help you avoid that. You know, and where to start. Ryan, I don't know if you've got some things in mind where you might want to dive in and share some of your wisdom over the years.
Well, sure. I think we'll start with something that we, Matt and I just had recorded a podcast just weeks ago on, we're in a new age of video. And we've seen some stuff that we really are surprised to see that comes into a conference call. Matt, well, what did you see recently? That kind of was some things that perhaps you don't want to do in your first time meeting a prospect.
Yeah, and, you know, it's probably appropriate because these are intro calls, and this is where it all begins, and first impressions matter. You know, we always coach our clients to be themselves, and that's super important. However, it might not be the best idea to be taking pulls off of a vape in an intro call. Or, you know, if you feel like you have to do it, I know that some of these things can be a little nerve-wracking and whatnot, you know, turn the video off. Turn your, you know, microphone off and sneak a pull in there. But yeah, that was interesting. I was a little surprised. I thought maybe he, you know, this gentleman would do it once, or I just kind of continued on throughout the call, right? So video is, would you do it? Would you be doing that if you were in a boardroom? Probably not.
Yeah. We see guys also, you know, doing video now in the really crazy spots, right? Like in their car, and they drop the phone and all of a sudden hear him, you know, having some expletives that they drop the phone and trying to get back on the call and all that. You know, we're all busy folks and in our call sometime or in our car sometime for these calls, but certainly just remember on video to turn the video off if you're going to be in a position where you don't want whatever you're doing to be seen by all and frankly judged by all. As you mentioned, Matt, first impressions matter. And oftentimes, particularly with the first round of calls with folks, you kind of got to put your best foot forward.
Yeah, and I think we're all understanding. I mean, life happens, and we're all working from our homes at times as well. But that probably means that you don't want to sneak away to the bathroom during the call and, you know, have your video on or your microphone on. So, again, be yourself. But conduct yourself as you would as though you were, you know, across somebody at the conference table.
Well, and that comes with the intro calls. You have to be yourself when it comes to the truth. You know, we have seen a few things lately in which we start out with an introduction call and introducing ourselves, and the revenue of a company is at $5 million. And by the time you get to a screening call, the revenue is at $3 million. And by the time you get onto the actual call, the revenue is down to $750,000 and three people have quit this week. So one thing that we have seen all the time is transparency can be your best friend. It's ideal to walk into something with the truth as the leading indicator. In a M&A deal, you're eventually it's going to come out.
Mike, I'm sure in 20 years, you've seen a couple of scenarios where a lack of transparency wasn't in the best interest of either our clients or, you know, the firms that they were, looking to merge and acquire with.
I know the one in particular where, you know, conventional wisdom is that if you're going to share with anybody about a pending transaction of the sale of your business, it should be with your, probably with your spouse. And that's about it. You need to keep transactions confidential as much as you can. And, you know, we have a situation where we were representing a buyer a few years ago and ultimately went through a very contentious legal negotiation. And that buyer was going to be exiting the business. And they had a number two in the business who was going to be staying. And certainly they would need to loop them in. But they looped them in very early to the point where they knew all of the terms of the transaction and ultimately came back to that owner and said they needed a much bigger check at closing that was to occur on a Monday. And this was on a Saturday afternoon, right before closing. Needless to say, that blew up the deal. And, you know, when we do the postmortem on that, we looked at it and said, well, you know, maybe it was because there was just too much transparency about the details of the transaction with that person that was staying and was going to be helping grow the business once it was sold. Maybe it had to do with just a bad actor, you know, hard to protect from that. But certainly conventional wisdom has it to be that, you know, amongst your staff, the transaction details should be held very close to the vest. And there's a need to know principle here. And if someone needs to know, they should be brought in at the right time. And certainly a competent advisor can help you with the timing of those notices.
Yeah, you can't plan for crazy. However, you can protect your interests, right, by determining who is critical and when and how you're going to communicate. Right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You know, another thing that's kind of interesting that we see in many, many deals that we'd love to share and we think is a mistake is, you know, people get deal fatigue in M&A, right? It's hard. This is a very difficult thing. It's called the most unnatural act in business for a reason. Because getting from the letter of intent to close is a long, long, very stressful, emotionally taxing journey. For buyers and sellers. It's why intermediaries are here. It's why companies that provide intermediary services, brokerage services exist. It's because there needs to be someone with the luxury of perspective who can help to bring the ends to the middle. And in that process, it's easy as you're working through it to get greedy, especially at the final hour. And we've seen plenty of examples of where people are sort of stepping over the check to buy their company to negotiate the last $1,000 on their, transition contract or, you know, situations where they've gotten through the hundreds of things that are needed to be negotiated in a transaction and they get down to the last one or two and that's a quote unquote showstopper, deal stopper, and it's minor, it's a minimal amount of dollars. And, you know, we've certainly worked with some M&A greats over the years. And, you know, some of those guys, talk about how the last 5% of any deal is probably not worth fighting over. That ultimately, if you can get 95% of the deal kind of covered off based on mutual agreement, the last 5%, which is where most of the consternation, hand-wringing, and craziness happens, is probably not worth fighting over. For the folks that have that approach, they certainly get a lot more deal done than the ones that don't.
Yeah, you know, there's a metaphor here, and not surprising. We're recording today, you know, from the Great White North in Minnesota. You know, so for all you deer hunters, this one's for you. Don't get caught picking berries when the deer are walking by, right? Your prize is that 12-point buck. You know, and the other thing, Mike, and you've seen this a million times, is stay focused on the prize, right? The deal, you know, trying to negotiate to the nth degree, you may forget the strategic value of the deal that is being done.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You know, there's some other crazy stuff we've seen, you know, and some people have questioned us on this, particularly as it relates to the fundamentals around sort of financials, right? So we had a client we represented on the buy side at one point, and, you know, and for everybody listening, we represent, you know, buyers and sellers at a pretty even split. But we happened to be representing a buyer, and, you know, we were advising them to pay probably double market, 14 times EBITDA for an acquisition that we helped them get done a few years ago. And the reason why, it was a situation where when the two companies came together, they could get to a place that they couldn't get apart, and they could get there pretty quickly. And the buyer certainly could get to their internal rate of return. We talk about internal rate of return a lot around here, which is kind of your return on investment, IRR. And they could get there and, you know, pretty quickly, about 2 years, 2.5 years, they could get all their money back, even at 14 times EBITDA. And so we advised them to do the deal. And there was dissension amongst the leadership of the company on whether that deal should get done. It was a family-run business, great company. The founder of the company, who is now the executive chairman, thought his son, who is now running the company, was completely certifiable to be doing this deal, and told him as such and told me as such. And ultimately, that CEO went ahead with that deal and actually got to a return that exceeded our forecast. So, you know, there's times when you just kind of got to think about the business in a way that might not be conventional. Challenge your own thinking about it. Don't get augured into, you know, what is the prevailing multiple and how will that get paid and should I overpay or not overpay? That's really not the important question. The important question is, how do we get to internal rate of return regardless of what the agreed upon number is? How do we manage that return so that we can de-risk this acquisition? And, you know, a litmus test we really like to always test all of our deals by is, can you get together to a place that you can't get apart?
Yeah, the 1 + 1 can equal 3, 4, or 5, right? And that's a strategic fit and cultural fit that we talk about all the time is just as, if not more important than the financial fit. I mean, look at just what happened this week, the proposed acquisition of Nuance by Microsoft. And, you know, that's the multiples on that deal are pretty skyrocketed. However, the strategic nature that is the opportunity for Microsoft in this certainly justifies it on its face.
Yeah, that being said, if you're thinking about funny stories that we've seen, how many times have we seen a company who has EBITDA south of $5 million wanting $20 or $30 million to business?
Right. It, you know, certainly there's a point of wanting to maximize your return if you're the founder of that business who wants to sell, and then there's a plausible amount of realism that has to be applied as to the number of buyers that would acquire it. And, you know, as I often say, there's always a group of irrationally exuberant buyers, right, that will overpay for businesses in general. And, you know, those irrationally exuberant buyers may or may not understand their internal rate of return and some of the paradigms. If they do, then great. They're doing it with purpose and they're doing it on purpose to get to an outcome. Others, you know, certainly don't. But I would tell you it's not like a Turkish bazaar. I mean, this isn't like, you know, buying camels and carpets. This is different from that. And it is based in some level of realism about, you know, what will the market bear for a business like mine? And I should get my head around what is a reasonable and plausible price to be paid if I'm a seller. We've also seen lots of confusion, particularly in small companies, which I think is quite surprising. Maybe not to our audience, but it is to me, where people think that the multiples that are generally tossed around in our industry are multiples of revenue. The net of it is the multiples that are tossed around in our industry are generally multiples of EBITDA or profit. You should know that there are multiples of revenue in our industry that get talked about, but they get talked about for comparison purposes only, because in private-to-private transactions, usually what was paid or what EBITDA was for a particular seller or a multiple EBITDA is never disclosed. And so, you know, you'll hear things that hover around 1 to 2 times revenue, sometimes between 1 and 1.5 can happen for companies that are really profitable. Valuations that get to 2, 3, 4, 5x revenue generally don't occur in the IT services world.
Maybe for our 100th episode, we could hear more about your stories in the Turkish bazaar. and or we could actually do an episode
from a Turkish bazaar.
From a Turkish bazaar, yeah, don't you think?
Yeah.
That'd be all right. I mean, shoot, we had a client of ours who was over in Istanbul last week, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, that is correct. So you get a report directly from Istanbul.
There you go.
You know, just one more story, maybe a couple here, but I'd love, Mike, Mike or Matt, has there been any time in which you have seen an ad back that goes beyond the pale? And to couch this back for new listeners or someone new to an M&A process, an ad back is an expense that has essentially hit your bottom line that you're able to add back to profit. That's usually typically a one-time expense that won't be ongoing in the firm. Buyers have the right to accept or reject those ad backs. And I was wondering if there's a few of those ad backs you've seen that maybe are of questionable nature.
We could do a whole episode twice over on questionable ad backs. But there's certainly a few stories that stick out. We know of a company we looked at in Florida one time that, let's just say, had a lot of questionable expenses on their profit and loss statement. Particularly as it related to entertainment and watercraft and other condos and other things that were being run through the business that we didn't quite know whether were legitimate or in support of criminal activity.
Let me guess, Miami?
Yeah, it's a good guess. They certainly wanted to add back all of those questionable things. And, you know, what certainly it brought fourth was that, you know, the fact that they were on the P&L to begin with was a big problem as it related to just the appropriate tax laws in the U.S. Beyond that, it had to do more with sort of getting to the core character of the owners of the business, and ultimately meant that it would be very difficult to take a business that consistently lost money, primarily because they were spending a huge share of what could have been profit on quote unquote entertainment. And so, you know, there's things that we see like that from time to time. Now, with that said, there are legitimate ad backs around owner benefit and occasionally entertainment that do apply. But when those things wildly overreach what is considered probably normative and or legal, they certainly are create a big question in the eyes and minds of any potential buyer.
Yeah, and you know, and this kind of falls back to that general principle of transparency. If you're trying to hide things, well, and we see it all the time, you're really not going to be successful at the end of the day.
Yeah. So just to wrap it up, you know, we've seen some crazy things in the year, some things not to do. You know, take a few notes on that. Be your best in your intro call. We heard that, you know, look considerable at your ad backs. Make sure that those are right. You want to keep things close to the vest when you're actually talking about deals. And you want to make sure that you don't fall in the trap that that time can kill all deals. You know, we've learned a lot simply by getting deals done. And that's something that separates Revenue Rocket apart from some of those others that haven't yet gone through the battles that we've seen.
Absolutely. So with that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this week, the third week of April, 2021. Join us next week. We have a special guest, Brent Combes from Microsoft, is going to be joining us to talk about what's going on at Microsoft. And, you know, he's been a friend of the firm for a long time, a guy we respect a lot. Take care.